a misuse on knowledge and understanding, the products of searching intelligence, could not possibly emerge from a consciousness of reality in which man is not separated from the environment, but rather exists as a part of living nature and the universe. Then, today, it is attempted to make amends for the damage to environment protective measures. All these endeavors remain only hopeless, superficial patchwork, if not curing of the occidental entelechy neurosis ensues, as Ben has characterized the objective reality conception. Healing would mean existential experience of a deeper self-encompassing reality. The experience of such a comprehensive reality is impeded in an environment rendered dead by man's hand, such as is present in our great cities and industrial districts. Here the contrast between self and outer world becomes especially evident. Sensations of alienation, of loneliness and menace arise. It is these that impress themselves on everyday consciousness in Western industrial society. They also take the upper hand everywhere that technological civilization extends itself, and they largely determine the production of modern art and literature. The danger of a cleft reality experience evolving is lower in a natural environment. In field and forest, and in the animal world sheltered therein, indeed, in every garden, a reality is perceptible that is infinitely much more real, older, deeper, and more wondrous than everything made by man's hand, that will yet endure. When the inanimate, mechanical, and concrete world vanishes again, becomes rusted and fallen into ruin. In the sprouting, growth, blooming, fruiting, death, germination of plants, in their relationship with the sun, whose light they are able to convert into a chemically bound energy in the form of organic compounds, out of which all life on our earth is built, in the being of plants, the same mysterious, inexhaustible, eternal life energy is evident, that has also brought us forth and takes us back again in its womb, and in which we are sheltered and united with all living things. A comprehensive reality consciousness that ever more infrequently develops spontaneously, the more the primordial flora and fauna on our Mother Earth must yield to a dead technological environment. The notion of reality as one of the self, standing opposite in confrontation to the outer world, began to form itself as reported in the citation from Ben, in the southern portion of our continent in Greek antiquity. No doubt, men at that time knew the suffering that was connected with such a cleft reality consciousness. The Greek genius tried to cure by supplementing the multiform, richly colored, sensual as well deeply sorrowful Apollonian world view created by the subject-object cleavage with the Dionysian world of experience, in which this cleavage is abolished in ecstatic inebriation. Nietzsche writes in his book The Birth of Tragedy, either through the influence of narcotic potions, about which all primitive men and races speak in hymns, or by the powerful approach of spring, penetrating pleasurefully the whole of nature, all Dionysian emotions awaken, in the intensification of which subjectivity passes away to complete self-oblivion. Under Dionysian magic, not only the alliance between man and man becomes closer, but also the alienated, hostile, or subdued nature celebrates again its day of atonement with its lost son, with man. So far the citation of Nietzsche. The mysteries of Eleusis that were celebrated annually in the fall over an interval of approximately 2,000 years from about 1500 BC until the 4th century AD were intimately connected with the ceremonies and festivals in honor of the god Dionysos. These mysteries were established for the goddess of agriculture Demeter as thanks for the recovery of her daughter Persephone, whom Hades, the god of the underworld, had abducted. A further thanksgiving was for the ear of grain that was presented by the two goddesses to Triptolemus, the first high priest of Eleusis. They taught him the cultivation of grain, which Triptolemus then disseminated over the whole globe. Persephone, however, was not always allowed to remain with her mother, because she had taken nourishment from Hades, contrary to the order of the highest gods. As punishment, she had to return to the underworld for part of the year. During this time it was winter on earth. The plants died and were withdrawn into the ground, to awaken to new life early in the year with Persephone's journey to earth. The myth of Demeter, Persephone, Hades, and other gods that was enacted as a drama formed, however, only the external framework of the events. The climax of the yearly ceremonies that began with the procession from Athens to Eleusis, lasting several days, was the concluding ceremony with the initiation that took place in the night. The initiates were forbidden by penalty of death to divulge what they had learned, beheld in the innermost, holiest chamber of the temple, in the telesterion, which means bowl. Not one of the multitude that ever initiated into the secret of Eleusis has ever done this. Pausanias, Plato, many Roman emperors such as Hadrian, Marcus Aurelius, and many other known personages of antiquity were party to this initiation. It must have been an illumination, a visionary sight of a deeper reality, an insight into the true basis of the universe. That can be concluded from the statements of the initiates about the value, about the importance of the vision for her life. Thus, as it is reported in a Homeric hymn, blissful is he among men on earth who has beheld that. He who has not been initiated into the holy mysteries, who has no part therein, remains a corpse in gloomy darkness. Pindar speaks of the Eleusinian benediction with the following words: blissful is he who, after having beheld this, enters in the way beneath the earth. He knows the end of life as well as its divinely granted beginning. Cicero, also famous initiate, likewise put in first position the splendor that fell upon his life from Eleusis, when he said, "Not only have we received the reason there that we may live in joy, but also besides that we may die with better hope." How could the mythological representation of such an obvious occurrence that runs its course annually before our eyes, namely the seed grain that is dropped into the earth, dies there in order to allow a new plant, new life, to ascend into the light, prove to be such a deep, comforting experience as that attested to by the cited records? It is traditional knowledge that the initiates were furnished with a potion, with a kikion, for the final ceremony. It is also known that barley extract and mint were ingredients of the kikion. Religious scholars and scholars of mythology like Karl Kerenyi, from whose book on the Eleusinian mysteries the preceding statements were taken, and with whom I was associated in relation to the search on the mysterious potion, are of the opinion that the kikion was mixed with the hallucinogenic drug. That would make understandable the ecstatic visionary experience of the Demeter Persephonimus as a symbol of the cycle of life and death in a comprehensive and timeless reality. When the Goth king Alaric, coming from the north, invaded Greece in 396 AD and destroyed the sanctuary of Eleusis, it was not only the end of a religious center, but it also signified the decisive downfall of the ancient world. With the monks who accompanied Alaric, Christianity penetrated into the country, which must be regarded as a cradle of European culture. The cultural historical meaning of the Eleusinian mysteries, their influence on European intellectual history, can scarcely be overestimated. Here, suffering man found a cure for his rational, objective, cleft intellect in a mystical totality experience that let him believe in immortality, in an everlasting existence. This belief has survived in early Christianity, although with other symbols. It is found as a promise even in particular passages of the Gospels, most clearly in the Gospel according to John, as in chapter 14, 16, 20. Jesus speaks to his disciples as he takes leave of them. "And I will pray to the Father, and he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth. At such day you shall know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you." This promise constitutes the heart of my Christian beliefs and my call to natural scientific research, that we will attain to knowledge of the universe through the Spirit of truth, and thereby to understanding of our being one with the deepest, most comprehensive reality with God. Ecclesiastical Christianity, determined by the duality of creator and creation, has, however, with its nature alienated religiosity, largely obliterated the Eleusinian Dionysian legacy of antiquity. In the Christian sphere of belief, only particular blessed men have attested to a timeless, comforting reality, experienced in spontaneous visionary states, to which in antiquity the elite of innumerable generations had access through the initiation of eleusis. The Unio Mystica of Catholic saints and the visions that the representatives of Christian mysticism, Jacob Böhme, Meister Eckhart, Angelus Silesius, Thomas Traherne, William Blake and others, describe in their writings are obviously essentially related to the enlightenment that the initiates in the Eleusinian mysteries experience. The fundamental importance of a mystical totality experience for the recovery of man in Western industrial societies afflicted by a one-sided rational materialistic worldview is today placed entirely in the foreground, not only by adherents of Eastern religious movements like Zen Buddhism, but also by leading representatives of academic psychiatry. Of the appropriate literature, here we will refer only to the books of Balthasar Sterling, the Basel psychiatrist working in Zurich. They give access also to numerous other authors who deal with the same problem. Today, a type of metamedicine, metapsychology, and metapsychiatry is beginning to include as a basic healing principle in therapeutic practice the metaphysical in man that manifests itself as an experience of a deeper duality surmounting reality. In addition, it is most significant that not only medicinal, but even wider circles of our society also consider the overcoming of the dualistic cleft worldview as a prerequisite and basis for the recovery and spiritual renewal of accidental civilization and culture, out of which renunciation of the materialistic philosophy of life could occur and a new reality consciousness could evolve. As a path to the perception of a deeper, comprehensive reality in which experiencing individual is also sheltered, meditation in its different forms today stands in the foreground. Meditation is distinguished from prayer in the usual sense, which is based upon the duality of creator and creation. Essentially, in that in meditation, the abolishment of the I-U barrier is aspired to by the fusing of object and subject, of sender and receiver, of objective reality and self. Objective reality, the worldview which the scientifically seeking spirit has produced, is the myth of our time. It has replaced the ecclesiastical, Christian, and mythical Apollonian worldview. But this ever-broadening objective knowledge constituting objective reality does not need to desecrate. In the contrary, if it only advances deep enough, it inevitably leads to the no further explainable primal ground of the universe, to the wonder, the mystery of the divine. In the microcosmos of the atom, in the macrocosmos of the spiral nebula. Meditation begins at the limits of the objective reality to which rational knowledge and perception have advanced. Meditation thus does not mean rejection of the objective reality. Rather, on the contrary, it consists of penetration to a deeper dimension of reality. It is not escape into a dream world. Rather, it seeks through simultaneous stereoscopic contemplation of the surfaces and depth of the objective reality after its comprehensive truth. It could become of fundamental importance and be not merely a transient fashion of the present if more and more men today would make a meditation hour, or at least a few minutes of meditation, a daily habit. As a result of the meditative penetration and broadening of the natural scientific worldview, a new, deepened reality consciousness would have to evolve that would increasingly become the property of all mankind. This could become the basis of a new religiosity, which would not be based on the beliefs of the dogmas of various religions, but rather on perception through the spirit of truth. What is meant here is a perception, a reading and understanding of the text at first hand, out of the book of that God's finger has written, as Paracelsus has said, out of the universe. The transformation of the objective world in a deepened and thereby religious reality consciousness can be accomplished gradually by continuing practice of meditation. It can also come to pass, however, as a certain enlightenment, as a visionary experience. It is then particularly profound, blessed and meaningful. Such a mystical totality experience may nevertheless be not induced even by decade-long meditation, as Balthasar Stehelin writes. Although it does not happen to every man, also the capability of mystical experience belongs to the essence of human spirituality. Nevertheless, in Eleusis, the mystical vision, the healing, comforting experience, could be arranged in the prescribed place at the appointed time for all of the multitudes who were initiated into the holy mysteries. This could be accomplished for by the fact that the hallucinogenic drug came into use. The characteristic property of hallucinogens to suspend the boundaries between the experiencing self and the outer world in an ecstatic emotional experience makes it possible, with their help and after suitable internal and external preparation, as it was accomplished in a perfect manner at Eleusis, to evoke a mystical totality experience according to plan, so to speak. Meditation is a preliminary to the same goal that was aspired to and was attained in Eleusinian mysteries. Accordingly, I imagine that in the future, with the help of LSD, the mystical vision, growing meditation, can be made accessible to an increasing number of practitioners of meditation. I see the true importance of LSD in the possibility of aiming from the material side, meditation aimed at the mystical experience of a deeper, comprehensive reality. Such a use accords entirely with the essence and working character of LSD as a sacred drug. Even the use of LSD as a drug aid in psychoanalysis and psychotherapy is based essentially on the same effects of LSD, on a transient loosening or suspension of the IU barrier that facilitates the extrication of patients from egocentric problem cycle, and on replacement of the rational objective worldview by emotional experience of a deeper reality. I thank you for your attention.